Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 203 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, oh my goodness, her fears. Yep, we got a good one coming up. And before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because we're sitting here hanging around just waiting to hear from you, and your feedback is just golden. Love, love, love to hear from you. All right. It's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
So I'm holding this book, the title of which is just the coolest, because it's right up my alley. I know. You all know I love that whole issue of stress and fear. So the title of this book is Do It Scared: Finding the Courage to Face Your Fears, Overcome Adversity, and Create a Life You Love. Now, the author is Ruth Sukup, and she is our wonderful guest today. And I want you to know a little bit about her. Many of you may have heard of her, because she is a New York Times bestselling author, and she's really dedicated to helping women overcome fear and create a life they love. She's got a blog, Living Well, Spending Less, and it reaches more than 1 million women each month. And she encourages all of her readers to follow their dreams and reach their goals. She's also the founder of Living Well Planner and Elite Blog Academy. And she's the author of 5 best-selling books. She's been all over the place. You probably read about her work in a multitude of multimedia platforms, from Fox News to Women's Day. And, you know, this is really cool. She's got a Do It Scared podcast, which was launched on April 30th, 2018. And I bet, for sure, so much of what's in the new book she learned just by listening to folk and working with experts on her podcast. So I love that. So welcome to the Her Podcast, Ruth.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So why the whole thing about fear? What basically got you going with the fear issue, especially as it relates to women?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things that got me going on this. First of all, fear has definitely been an active part of my life for as long as I can remember. And it's always been something that I've had to actively work to push past. In fact, Do It Scared started out as my own personal motto. And then after I started my company, became the first of our company's core values. And then just over the past few years, as my business has grown and I've spoken to more and more women and men too, but a lot of women are around the country, around the world, and through Elite Blog Academy and through my planner. And I talk a lot about setting big goals for yourself and going after your goals and dreams and creating the life you love. And what I kept hearing back from so many people so often, and it came up again and again and again, was this: they say things like, "Ruth, I feel like I'm sitting on the sidelines of my life. You talk about wanting to go after your goals and dreams. You talk about setting these big goals for yourself, but I can't seem to make myself do it. I'm so scared, and I feel like my life is passing me by. I feel like I'm stuck, and I don't know who I am anymore. I've spent my whole life taking care of other people, and I'm now stuck, and I don't know how to move forward." And it got me so curious, because it wasn't just one or two people that said things like this. It was over and over and over again, and it kept coming up, this idea of fear and how fear is so prevalent. And it made me want to dig deeper, and it made me want to find out, first of all, what is this fear that's holding us back? Does it look the same for everyone? Is it universal? And more importantly, what can we do about it? How do we combat it? Because surely there must be people who are overcoming their fear. So what are they doing? And that drove me to start asking questions, which ended up becoming this huge research study that I sort of inadvertently fell into. And we surveyed more than 4,000 people along the way. And I had so much data at that point that I had to hire a whole team of researchers and psychologists to help me sift through it all. But what we discovered was really, really incredibly fascinating.
And what you discovered is all over this book. I'm curious, you said fear was, you know, a pivotal piece of your life. I mean, whose life isn't it a big piece of? But of these fear archetypes that you're going to be talking about in a minute, which one was you?
Well, of the fear archetypes, my own personal archetype is the outcast. And the outcast archetype fears more than anything else, fears rejection. And so for the outcast, the way that that often manifests in our lives is, if you're an outcast, is that because you fear rejection so much, you'll often reject other people in order to avoid being rejected in return. And so the outcast is actually probably the most ironic of all seven of the archetypes, which we can talk about all seven of them. But it's the most ironic one because to the outside observers, the outcast can often appear to be fearless. It seems like, oh, the outcast doesn't care about what anybody thinks, but actually they care. They do care about being rejected. And so that comes across, the way that it shows up is making people think that they don't need anyone.
How fascinating. All right. So what you ended up doing was learning a lot about yourself throughout this whole thing too, I would imagine.
And oh my goodness.
I think that is, yes, awesome, because then it gives you a chance to be able to kind of say, well, what a win-win here. I could help other people and myself at the same time. So there are seven archetypes that you've described here. The first one is of really interesting interest to me. I just ran into someone I'm working with who is enormously successful, but she's starting to do something fascinating, and that is she will, you know, get that contract, or she'll garner the attention of that very important, you know, company or that CEO or whomever, and they'll say, write a proposal and, you know, present it to us because we're really interested in working with you. And then she doesn't follow through. She finds herself coming up with 900. So the first archetype, I'm assuming that this woman falls into this one, is the procrastinator when you're most afraid of making a mistake. So tell us about that. Do you think that's what she is?
So that definitely sounds like it could be. And I'm sure as you were probably reading through the book and reading these personas of each of the archetypes, you could probably start to recognize people in your life that fit each one. I think that's such a cool thing because it actually gives you so much empathy for people when you realize, oh my gosh, everybody experiences fear. And this person that I thought, you know, was just being difficult, maybe this is just a block for them because they have fear in this area. And so, yes, the procrastinator is another name for the perfectionist, and their deepest fear for the procrastinator is the fear that of getting it wrong, of making a mistake. And it often causes this analysis paralysis. So in the case that the example that you just gave of your friend not doing the contract, and sometimes as more success comes, that can actually bring out that fear even more. Because
now, why is that?
And now
why would that be true?
You know, I think it feels like more pressure, there's more at stake. And so the fear of making a mistake is even bigger. When you have nothing to lose, you don't have to be as afraid of making a mistake, because if you make a mistake, what are you going to lose? But now if she has had some success with her business, there is something real at stake, even though what's more at stake is the loss of business if she doesn't follow through at all. And yet it can cause that paralysis of not wanting to mess it up.
How
interesting. And that is actually the most common of all the archetypes. The procrastinator is, I believe, it's the top archetype for 35% to 40% of the population.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea. How fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm learning things all the time. Oh my gosh. So that's something interesting. So you already described the outcast, which I still find quite fascinating. There's, how about that rule follower? I follow the rules, right? When you're most afraid of coloring outside the lines. Oh my gosh, I'm outside the line. So how do you, what's that about?
I mean, I think most of us could probably think of a person in our life, or maybe we are that person, who just gets so freaked out anytime we think we're doing it wrong, that we're going against authority or whatever the rules say we're supposed to do. There's the people that read every instruction manual to the letter and follow the instructions. They want things to be step by step, and also tend to get a little bit uptight when other people step outside the lines or don't follow the rules either. It's almost an unhealthy fear of authority for the rule follower. And that also leads to paralysis, because it's a paralysis of not wanting to get it wrong, and not in the same way of making a mistake, because that's more of an internal fear of making a mistake, but a fear that you might get in trouble if you break a rule. And, you know, that can be very, very paralyzing for people, because they don't ever dare take risks or step outside the box or try new things, because if it's not clearly laid out, they're not interested.
Oh, man. All right. So I hear that. And I'd say they were just a little tightly wound too. Just saying, just putting it out there.
So the next one is so womanly
and it's the damn people pleaser. You know, you're so afraid of what other people, what are they going to think? What's that about? Right. So yes. I think a whole bunch of our podcast listeners are going, that's me. You know, what are they going to think? They'll be gossiping behind my back and, you know, and all the rest of it and back and forth. That one most definitely is a little, you know, definitely a paralyzing kind of fear, because you're constantly, you know, trolling around, trying to surveil and see who's out there and who's going to be jumping on you if you do something a little bit differently. Here's another one, the self-doubter, when you're most afraid that you're not enough. Now, what is that about?
Yes, the self-doubter is probably the most hypercritical of all of the seven fear archetypes. So there's a lot of negative self-talk that's happening, and the self-doubter is almost paralyzed by this idea that they're not good enough, not enough, not good at whatever it is that they want to do. There's a lot of that. Who are you to think you could ever do something like that? But how that often plays out also, and this can be a really sad part of the self-doubter archetype, but it plays out in not only hypercriticism of oneself, but hypercriticism of other people, especially the people closest to the self-doubter. You probably can think of people like this in your life who just seem like they never have a nice thing to say about anyone. There's always this, oh my gosh, can you believe so-and-so, they did this and this and this and this. And often that comes from a place of extreme insecurity with themselves, and this just feeling that they are not enough. And that, I think that's one for me that it's given me a lot more empathy doing this work for people in my life that I know have this self-doubter archetype. Whereas before, it used to bother me that they were so critical. Now I can have, it does still bother me, but now I can sort of see, oh my gosh, this is actually coming from a place of fear and not necessarily a place of malice.
Gotcha. All right, let's go on to the excuse maker. Mm-hmm. When you're most afraid of taking responsibility, tell us what that's about.
Yes. The excuse maker, otherwise known as the blame shifter, is the one who never wants to get pinned down. They don't ever want to be the one who decides where they're going to go eat, because if the restaurant's no good, then they're going to be the ones that everybody blames for it. Little things like that. We can probably all think of somebody that never wants to make the final decision because they don't want to have that responsibility on their shoulders of that they could possibly shoulder the blame if something goes wrong.
Okay. And then the final one is, the pessimist, when you're most afraid of adversity. So how does the pessimist, what does the pessimist sound like?
You know, the pessimist is somebody who has probably experienced their fair share of adversity. And actually, so the pessimism comes not just from this general pessimistic worldview, but often because they've had hard things happen to them. They've experienced a lot of pain or trauma or hardship in their life that now they've almost given up. And so the pessimist will say things like, I don't know why, and why I should even bother. You know, bad things have happened to me. There's no point in even trying. And it's very much a victimness that happens for the pessimist. And it's really sad, because what happens for the pessimist is that mindset, and that getting stuck in the pessimist mindset that you can't change anything, you can't change your circumstances, or you might just experience pain again, is actually what ends up keeping them stuck.
Gotcha. So we have all kinds of architects. Now, a lot of people are probably sitting back saying, I'm not sure which one I am. Do you have an online assessment?
We do have an assessment, yes. And there's a couple things I want to say about that. First of all, we each have a little bit of all seven archetypes within us. But for most people, there's generally one or sometimes two or three that are most prevalent in your life. And those do interact and interplay in different ways. So we have an online assessment that you can take. You can find it at doitscared.com. And the assessment is free to take. And the free version of the assessment will give you your top archetypes. It'll tell you what your most prominent fear archetype is. And then if you want to dig deeper, we do have a premium version of the assessment as well. And that will tell you, give you a lot more information about your top three and how those three interact with each other. And then it will also give you your overall fear score and show you how you rate on all seven of them. And so
I love it. You know what I really love about what you've done, you know, in the book especially, but obviously your life in general, all your life work, is you lay down a blueprint and a plan and a strategy for people to begin to really address whatever archetype they may be, or combinations thereof, and what to do with that. In the book, you have an entire section that's called The Principles of Courage. But, you know, when I was reading the last section of the book, it's called Courage in Action. One in particular really caught my eye, and I want to spend a moment with that, because it's something that I've talked about so often in my own books and my own work, and I found it to be very powerful. And that was in chapter 16. It's find your why. Your why must be bigger than your fear. And you start with a quote by Nietzsche, and it is, if we have our own why in life, we shall get along with almost any how. I loved it. So how does one craft a why that supersedes one's fears?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because there's actually not one answer to that. I think it's different for everyone. And one of the things that we discovered through the research that we did is that most people, in order to overcome fear, have to have some sort of catalyst. And that, I guess, could be equated to being your why. But often what I tell people, if you don't know what your why is, if you haven't figured out what your why is, and for some people, the why is very apparent. You know, my why is my kids, or my why is because I just feel compelled to change the world or to share my message or to do something. For some people, it's just there and it lights that fire. But for other people, it's not quite as apparent, at least not always at first. But what we did find for the people in our study who were afraid to do something but were able to overcome that fear is that there was always a catalyst, something that compelled them to take action, whereas before they had been more stuck. And so it ranged anywhere from having some sort of tragedy or trauma in their life, something that was completely out of their control, to the other end of the spectrum, which was just deciding one day, waking up and deciding, I don't want to live my life like this anymore. I am done. And making that, and sort of making that mental shift. So something that's completely in your control, something that's completely out of your control. But then the other catalysts were sort of along the continuum. So for some people, it was getting a really good opportunity, or, you know, finding a coach or a mentor or somebody to help you, or, you know, starting to do a lot of self-development work, reading books or listening to podcasts or doing things like that. And so what I tell people often is that if you are struggling to figure out what your why is, because sometimes that can feel very esoteric, right? You need to have a why, and you need to have a why that's bigger than yourself and bigger than your fear. And that's great to say, but what if you don't? Where do you find that? And I think that it can be manufactured. And I talk about that in the book. I think you can manufacture a catalyst. So you might not be able to manufacture a tragedy or hardship, nor would you want to in your life, but you can hire a coach and let that be your catalyst and let that be your why for a while. Well, I've invested a lot of money in paying this coach, so I better listen to what they say. Or you can manufacture a catalyst where you become more intentional about reading books or listening to podcasts or doing, you know, listening to things like this show, and where you can create more of that motivation in your life.
I love it. You know, I was thinking, as a physician, I'm always looking to make sure people get motivated, you know, and trying to find that motivation and, you know, to make appropriate changes in their lifestyle, how they live it, what's the passion, you know, on and on and back and forth. And at the end of the day, I remember this one situation where there was this fabulously wonderful woman who sat down in front of me, and she was pushing 300 pounds. I mean, she was way off track. She was the classic kind of woman who just basically gave everything to her family, never really, you know, prioritized herself, obviously had a trauma history, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, physicians for years have been yelling and screaming at her, you've got to, you know, shed some weight. And, you know, and she'd say, why? And they'd say, well, I mean, cholesterol's up, your blood sugar. It just didn't make, you know, she was like, well, thanks for sharing. You know, whereas with somebody else, be like, dang, are you kidding me? My cholesterol's what? And my blood sugar's what? And then all of a sudden you got yourself a little why there. It just went in one ear and out the other. Until one day she was told that she was going to be given a major honor, and the honor had something to do with her family's in the military. And she was going to be on stage and she was going to speak. It was going to be a year from then. And she, you know, was going to have to wear a uniform. This was Civil Air Patrol. And, you know, they showed her the pictures of what she would wear, because she is so large. And the picture, I mean, it might as well just been a, you know, throw a tarp over her. I mean, it was just a horrible looking, big dress, nasty looking thing versus what she could have worn, right? Which is a beautiful kind of tailored suit that looks really great, right? So it was hysterical. She just sat in front of me. She says, I'm here because I need you to guide me with appropriate information to be able to wear that suit. She says, I'll be damned if I'm ever wearing that thing, that tent they pointed at. And so I'm sitting there going, you know, doctors for years have been yelling and screaming at her for all the right reasons. And it took wearing a tent versus a suit. And it wasn't like so much a vanity play. It was the fact that she was so proud of this award. She wanted her family to be proud. She herself wanted to be proud of herself. And she didn't want all the bad dialogue to be, you know, confusing her brain when she was out there speaking. And son of a gun, I have never seen anyone drop weight that fast. And she did it healthfully. It turns out she's quite the little athlete, but she did it beautifully. She looked phenomenal on stage. It was actually closer to a year and a half later. So she ended up having plenty of time to be able to get her act together. And flash forward years later, she still has it off. Why? You know why? Because she took a picture, you know, a beautiful picture. There were a lot of pictures that day, and she stuck it up on her desk. And she's got another one on her fridge, and she looks at that. She feels the pride. She feels the why, and she just keeps marching along and maintaining. I mean, that to me was a definition of what why is all about. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, I can totally relate to that, and not exactly on that level because I didn't have 300 pounds to lose, but I did have 25 pounds to lose, and I could not lose it. 4 years. And it was you know, I have an online business, so I spend a lot of time sitting at the computer, and I just, for years and years, kept telling myself, well, I just need to focus on my business right now, and I need to focus on my business, and this isn't a priority, and I shouldn't be so vain, and it's just 25 pounds, and I'm really tall, so maybe people can't even tell, but I could tell. And I felt more and more uncomfortable to the point where I was hiding from the world. I didn't want to be on video. I didn't, you know, I got asked to be on television or to be interviewed for things, and I would decline because I didn't feel comfortable with the way that I looked. And finally, I went on a personal retreat, and I realized that I was, you know, right on the edge of burnout, and realized that I needed to make some changes in my life. But what I really realized is that things were not going well in my business, and they weren't going well in my marriage for the same reason, was because I wasn't daring to show up. I was hiding from my husband because I didn't feel comfortable with my weight. And so, you know, that affects your intimacy, but it also affected the way I was showing up in my business, which for better or worse is very tied to myself as a personality. And I finally realized that I wanted to be successful in both those things. Those things mattered to me more than anything else. And that was the only way I was able to find the motivation to actually lose the weight. I didn't want to lose the weight for myself. I could never, you know, you get hungry and then you don't feel motivated anymore. But when I could tie it to things that I really cared about, which was making my business successful and making my marriage successful, that was when I could actually lose the weight.
All right. How tall are you?
I'm 6'2".
I knew it. I looked at the picture of you on the cover, and by the way, the cover is gorgeous, mostly because she's on the cover. I'm 5'9", so I feel like I'm anemic compared to you, but I could see the long legs. I could see the beautiful, you know, broad shoulders of, you know, I mean, you look like you're someone who's an athlete. You look absolutely vibrant. And I'm just sort of smiling, saying, hey, you know, it's really nice to be really talking to a true human being when it comes to all of this. And someone who is, like we always love to say, a work in progress, just like all of us who are here on the Herb podcast, listening to you, Ruth Sukup. Now, I'm going to be making sure that you all get out there and grab the book, Do It Scared. That's all you got to remember. Do It Scared. And if you want to learn more about Ruth's wonderful work, you can go right on over to the book itself, doitscared.com, or to Ruth Sukup. And that's R-U-T-H, S as in Sam, O-U-K-U-P as in Paul. .com to be able to learn more about Ruth's wonderful work and read her blogs and keep it rocking all the way around. Ruth, all I can say is this was a fabulous episode. Can't thank you enough for sharing your wisdom and your experience because it's quite sage. And I think so many of us just sat back and said, yep, I get it. Mm-hmm. Resonates with me too. So I thank you so much, Ruth, for being on the Herb podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was great to be here.
Well, we're going to be tapping you again and again, so get ready. Just strap it on. You know, we're on for the roller coaster ride of life, and we'll be circling back to you because you know something? You have some great things to share with us, and we love it. And we do love it, don't we, Herb podcast listeners? Yeah, so right now you're going to run on over to iTunes, rate and review this episode because this was that good. I want to hear your feedback. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Herb podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Herb podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and hey, stay well.